So welcome to the Jerome Stern Distinguished Writers Series. We're glad to have you back.
Please join me in welcoming the person that will introduce our first reader, Mari Carter.
Always the gentleman to try to keep me from tripping over this dress. Thanks, Matt. Whitney. You always do such a good job. Keith, holding everything together. It's my pleasure to be here tonight. So let me start off by saying what an honor it is to introduce Brandi Nicole Martin to you. In composing this introduction, I first thought about starting with a little anecdote, as one does, that might provide a brief sketch of who Brandi is as a person, apart from being an obviously gifted poet. But I also know that there is nothing I can tell you about Brandi Nicole that you won't learn for yourself in listening to her read tonight. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the Nietzsche quote, "When you look long into an abyss, the abyss also looks into you." Well, in listening to Brandi Nicole's work tonight, be prepared for one thing to become very apparent. Brandi Nicole looks into the abyss. Not only does she look into it, she pulls up a lawn chair, cracks a beer, and flips the abyss the bird. Which is to say that Brandi Nicole is fierce and unshakable in her refusal to let anyone off easy, especially when it comes to her poetry. Tonight, she'll be reading a few sections of a longer poem that she's been working on. I've been privileged enough to see a few of these sections in workshop, but only recently was I able to sit down with a more significant portion of it. And let me tell you, this poem is a beast. Besides just its technical efficiency, the discipline shown in its rhyme and meter, the concise nature of its narrative and its lyrical flourishes, this poem is also unapologetically honest in terms of content. Brandi Nicole Speaker is assertive, meditative, and fully realized. While reading, I couldn't help but be drawn in by the voice of the poem, its sexuality, its intelligence, and its righteous anger. This is a speaker who is all too aware of the contracts we make mentally, physically, and emotionally with others, how they are established, fulfilled, broken. And then halfway through reading, something occurred to me. I needed this poem. I needed it to own the actions taken and accept the consequences rendered, to acknowledge a history of behavior and its lineage, but not romanticize or excuse it. I needed a poem that didn't temper its function for the sake of approval. I needed a poem that didn't have time for bullshit. Brandi Nicole's voice is an important one. It's necessary. Her work doesn't avoid the dark rooms of introspection. And when entering those rooms, it doesn't immediately look for a light switch. It does what our eyes are designed to do. It adjusts, and it finds a way to see nuance in the darkness. In life, much the same as it is in Brandi Nicole's work, sometimes that means saying fuck a lot. Sometimes it means reckoning with those people, memories, and injuries that served as gravitational centers of our universe at some point or another. But undoubtedly, it requires that we be candid about our efforts to reconcile what is worst in us with what is best in us. To say that I love Brandi Nicole and her work would be a gross understatement. Not only is she an incredibly loyal and generous friend, someone I'd gladly pull up a chair next to and scream into the abyss with, she is also an amazing poet. Because Brandi is a poet with the kind of voice that fills up everything, because it can, because it isn't asking anyone's permission. Brandi Nicole Martin's poetry has appeared or is forthcoming in Prairie Schooner, Denver Quarterly, Willow Springs, Washington Square Review, Nashville Review, Spoon River Poetry Review, Salt Hill, Crab Orchard, Harper Palette, and Minnesota Review, among others. She is at work on her MFA in poetry here at Florida State University, where she was recently the recipient of the 2016 Emerging Writer Spotlight Award selected by D.A. Powell. Please help me in welcoming a bona fide force of nature to the Warehouse stage, Ms. Brandi Nicole Martin.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for being here. Shout out to Jess for doing my cat eyes, and to Mari for just now making me cry and mess them up a little. So, as she said, I'm going to read you 11 sections of a longer poem I wrote this summer. I want to give brief 10 seconds of context for those of you who haven't been in workshops with me for the past 3 years, and then I'll just read the thing straight through in numbered sections. So, number one, I had these Todd poems about a boyfriend of 4 years who was a really positive force in my life. Todd was also a believer in the notion that I should forget about all of my issues so that everyone should have a good time. Number two, I have no more issues than most, but these issues specifically inform the poem. I'm an addict. I have a dead father who was also an addict, and I was in a car accident in 2008 and almost joined him. And number three, Todd's gone now, and I went to Massachusetts, which is pretty exotic for me as a longtime Southerner, this summer to let an old friend take care of me. And this poem is set either in Massachusetts or in the many 22-hour-long car drives I took there this summer where I kind of lost my mind. So this is to Todd. It's about the old friend, and it's called Exit Music. Exit Music. One. Whoops, I kicked the microphone, sorry. Todd, I wish the wasps for you. I missed the day before we met. I crawled along the bayou. Undead, I dragged my bad leg behind the good. There are two ways to tell a story. In one, I love your bottles dotting still water. I relish my body, what muscles been melted to bone. In another, I'm so sad I hear voices from whatever limitless pit of the past boiling over. That man with tanned hands and our unborn daughter I killed with pills. I'm a monster. Three lovely quiet wives. To thine own self be ruthless in shades of green. I'm nasty in my jealousy. That harlot you told about your dick. I'm a mistress. I'm delicate down to my tendons. Strands of hair I dyed wine red. Once I bled for 8 days straight. I would have cherished any child with you. I found someone who lifts my wrists like you never could. He might have a wife. He asks my favorite Buckley line. I'm such a romantic. He likes better vinyl than you. We saw running water, four foxes, wild turkeys frantic in the middle of the road. Two. Even now, the nectar beads down my chin. Even now, I beg the fruit flies rush in, and I won't know Lilith again for years. In her dream, discord spread into gardens. In her dream, a tree stood on its head. Oh, Todd, I spin your lies into spider silk. I rebuild my body from rain. I press this man's mouth to the bruises. Something ruptures, something luminous, and I see trauma in the pine trees, potentiae and last rays on their branches. I make this man come in his basement, and his woman's lips part in surprise. Three. Yes, Todd, I was anxious. Yes, Todd, you are the same as that plant, how it climbs, twists like spines through my ribs, leads away from the lungs, and though you are a coward, you are still my white trash lover, my tough-necked trucker with a psalm on his shoulder. My orangutan, Philo Beto, my bare knuckle fight. I thought that lake was aflame. I thought I'd tire of hearing your lady's fragrant name. It tastes sharp as my new lover's cock in my mouth, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be. That man you hate for what he did to me, man who prays before he leaves the cathedral, dips his thumbs in both water and ash. We splay in our wheat field, we genuflect on the deaths of our fathers, we speak in come-ons, hunger, and rhymes. He is not hairless, he does not sleep, ate solid each night, oh Todd, he'd never dream of marrying me. He is restless most in midsummer, knocks his head against doorways before I wake. He's got the bodies of birds in his walls, and I flinch when he asks if I feel blood. I want to lick his cut just to see if it's real. Four. I was never your biscuit, never your mender of antiques and flannel, lone mole across your neck, your flea eggs, your mange, the jaguar's last lament, your Priscilla and horn rims asleep on the train. I have worn the purple dress. I tore open my brash head the night I spiderwebbed the windshield. I'm not your tincture, your boozy mistress. This lame sucker's up walking now, so listen, Todd, the clincher. I elbow crawled through car bombs and bar brawls just to find you. I'm not your limp Virginia dick. I've tongued the staples from my skin. I'm the woman swathed in bloodshot, rising up from unclean seas. So take your grade school lisp. Take your fist right through our drywall and double down. Toss your chips unchased and loose to rebel ground. What hard on, oh risk taker. I exist inside the torso of your new broad, and no matter how awkwardly you caress her ginger breasts, it'll be me who's fucking you. 5. Did we ever notice motionless? What color was bourbon in the Lake Charles rain? I wreck myself against the wet, and wherever gauzy blisters shed, palmetto bugs stream up these debased walls, unnatural as blood. Yes, Todd, I said blood. I like the sublime of it. Sown creature who nests. Her fellow messes himself in the desert like some jackal or goat. A dreadful feather drifts into the bowl. You are right. Sometimes I'm raw as the salmon. I can't manage this deluge of thirst. In white, I remember our premiere night on that bayou. I dredge up that jukebox in neon and moon. Years later, that bathroom. It's algae and grout. I buried that vial to keep your admirers out, and you called me lost daughter. You said dead fathers don't beat credence and two-stepping in the light. The poet wrote, white is the color of mourning. My father spoke nothing for the flood in his throat. 6. Which you'd know fuck all about. As in idiomatic, vulgar, ambrosial, sculptured knot, my Todd. As in, they're all fuck all decent bars around here. As in, fuck all I could have done if I'd tried. And fuck all my poems in a Amarato. Fuck this one, my cheater, because I can't resist the image. A grisly listless in a ruined city. A hawk atop a telephone pole. I drew a line with my finger across, as in nothing at all. My neck, not for notched tin that split my knuckle to bone, not for you when you refused the urgency of my blood, as in fuck all that can ever be sown. But when foxes cry at dusk up here, I hear coon hounds or a two-year-old girl. To our ears, it sounds painful, as in very little. They trace their noses over gloam slick grass, and my new sweetheart's eyes are like those of a beaten down Jesus. I don't tell him this. I tell him those foxes aren't waiting for rain, but hoping for snow in this wood without end, amen. 7. A lament. No boners, no masters, only gullet full of salt. I lied in my own piss. Todd, I am ravished, wrapped in ivy in his madness and cum, unhappiness of Edom, I sat on innumerable waters, I guzzled the sins of the daughter, I drank until I was warm again. Todd, sometimes three oceans each night, sometimes I dignify, sometimes in seaweed and snakes, I will die like my father, covered in vomit. In dewdrops of alkali, in rum lust, bloat. I don't know what arose from what belly of Dead Sea, so finish your dinner, Todd. Not everybody floats. 8. Not all charlatans are wranglers in boots made of gator. Not all orgies on church stoops, on impotent porches. Not for all that easy Crescent City would I submit to you. I want to suck the gun off sometimes. If fish crawled, they crawled at dawn, you said. You said Adam was deribbed for Eve to be. I bet Lilith thought, fuck all, torch it all, when an unqualified crock of shit. I bet Lilith, half a lie. Drug her tongue along the rottenness, soil of your torso, below Mason-Dixon line grime. You hip-swinging cadaver, bag of osseous matter and seersucker love, what? I am jealous of a Satanist. Pagan wasted trucker has come to run us off the road. In smoked out foxholes shall the Lilith repose. She touches herself, she skins off her clothes. I will not try to explain, brow of my father, sirens throb the window pane, I fuck my Jesus till I'm right again, her tits, his ravenous mouth, landfills, waterfalls, mirrors, trees, his seed, my craving face, my addiction is a scalpel, all true, is a jugular open fruit, I taste gravel past midnight, blood orange, blood moon, vacant state, and the stoplight falters. Sloshed at the wheel, I resent her unripe nose. My obsession stumbles from lung to heart. My father's body was unmarked. I don't know shit about love. Open space makes me anxious. I want to run off the road. I want to singe myself at the stake. All of Georgia is closed. I need what I cannot control. I need what punishes me. The coy wolf howls at power lines. My father braids my hair in the dark. I envy her in the pillory. My Yahweh fingers my scars. Sunlight cuts through shrubs. I smother myself. I suck off the gun. I want to run off the road. He knew me when I met you. I sent him photos, my tongue, my eager teeth. Lip of the bayou, edge of your porch, your shut front door, my throat, his dick, my body, my ditch. The grass slicks with wretch. My father's aorta, the nearest neon exit sign. Todd, I needed you. I want to run off the road. 9. After I go, the pitch will split open. After I leave, the husk threshes itself with abandon. I mislead, I dampen, I discard. My blue Hawaii, I loved you. I bail out the windshield of a car that somersaults again and again in its glassless afterlife. The red birds scatter. The bog turns dry. I loved you. The motor combusts. The muffler cauterizes the tenderness of my tendons. Anything free threshing is naked. Anything in mayflies. I loved you. Beneath the surface is insubstantial, raw, caught in the act of cantering aqueous off the brim of the dam. One high tide lie, I loved you. Under branch messes the land, a stone drops, a lone rock, a wheat field ruptures. I wanted to come, I wanted to come. I swallow the bayou, I loved you. Inside, the stripe of ants up your garbage can, fuck, fuck, fuck. Fuck, Todd, all I wanted was love. I haunt my Emmanuel. I fantasize. Eye of the tempest, I loved you. His eyes are gawking down barrels, our bodies blotted in soil, in ancient windows and pastures under a white steeple. Two-line goodbye, I loved you. Atop a holy mountain bawling straight into what I mistake for gables for hanging for the moment the vertebrae snaps. His stoop hesitates into a lake. I kneel as a dog at my father's grave. I take the dead animal from the statue's open hand. I am not young anymore. I can't wear stiletto heels. I was never new to you. Mouth to mouth till I no longer have the strength. I laid a bic at the headstone. I arranged it beside a porcelain ship with three sails. Sometimes my spine is compressed. Sometimes I get off on a breath. By get off, I mean climax. By climax, I mean plummet breast first into love. I hate myself. I want to run off the road. T. To be deceased is to be free of fever in Mississippi, O roaming basset, blistered paws and swollen eye, no dust motes over our heater, how it oscillates, no ottoman, no feet touching other souls' feet before dinner, nary a rock and nary a hand, no thunder or rattling of houses, wisteria feeding into no walls, no lichen, no spider, no clay caked 4 inches thick across concrete, no goldenrod or feral child, his tainted face, his rap at the deadbolt during our foreplay, boring foreplay, that not really mattering. Tuna casserole, gun shows, coiled hose and the curtains always drawn, no mushrooms, no docks, no bellies full of omelets, no backs against the tile as the ceiling fan circulates, circulates, circulates. I'm hollow as a chasm. Vacant as the cool undertouch of its boulders, lone cobweb gossamer on stone, Jesus' thumbprint inside me, vein and rib cage come undone, they just goddamn unravel. I lust for a father. I lust for someone lusting after me. Through starving tree leaves, I hate myself. Through airwaves, I hate myself. Mosquito hawk is another way to say mayfly. Ankle deep in rain, I hate myself. Jesus flosses and I want to fuck in motion and the glass shards glitter like the sun. 10. Once it is written, it cannot be erased. 2 a.m. and Jesus's bedroom diffuses to ochre to midnight to violet to green. I don't know anything anymore. A branch and a knot of red hair. White grit in a pill-less bottle. The bottle itself is ablaze. Black coffee in a fucking glass mug. Thin carpet of an office. Empty parking lot. Body tranquil by the sea. And it's awful, Todd, that any time anyone's on the cusp of some highness, waterfall or pulpit of the devil himself, one slip, certain death, quickened breath is not unlike interest. In this you can be certain. I mistake a mirror for a window pane. I mistake freight trains for the next dew storm. Ivy on my leg is not unlike incandescent metal, wreckage or the fine side of a blade. In moments as these, she spins in an orange grove. She is a dark shape in the mist. She has bright eyes and 8 past lives, and I envy her. Some days I'm afraid I'll never walk straight. I'll always hunch to one side and clutch at my hip. Your kitchen sink, grease popping in the frying pan. My dress is atop some t-shirts and denim. Wolf blanket hanging from the curtains. Your palm, her alabaster thigh. Fuck scrambled eggs. I know what it sounds like when a ligament tears. Long drives mean everything to me. A stone drops a lone rock. Roads potholed until Hartford, and an hour past, a rabbit sniffing in the yard. Stained glass peacock, and these days my dinner bought live and still moving. Drops flying when the shell cracks and I wrench the white meat back with my bare hands. I never knew anything to begin with. I mistake sunlight for blindness, a halo for his hairs around a drain, your waterlogged heart, the sheen of mine beating in colors with the lights out, my throat, his dick, my body, my ditch. If I don't touch the ivy, the redness won't spread. Apex of our hike, and I can see Canada from here. 11. Something brief and gray-white approaches, something electric, something toneless as any moment on any ridge off which a body hangs. Realms away, the palm frond folds into a rose. A thing can be both weak and delicate. Todd, my shadow snags another on this most holy boulder. Todd, my father never showed me how to hold on to a ghost in that instant before it slips delicious into mist. A corpse cannot fix this image. The spirit flattens. The spirit heaves. I got some red in the sink. Fuck all it could have done to save us. And this is how I die. My seeking finger. Book of Bob Dylan. the slight light of trauma from which there is no rising.
All right, so we're going to get started with our second reader. And here to introduce him is Jamie Ringlud. Please welcome him to the stage.
Hello. I'm just going to get started. In one of my favorite memories of Zach Strait, Dorothy, Zach, and I met for a quick lunch on campus. Zach had just bought a banana at the pod market, and while Dorothy and I scarfed down our lunches, Zach carefully peeled the banana, inspected it, and took a bite. And then, very slowly, his face filled with a kind of uncontrollable, ruffled wonder. "Guys," he said, this is the best banana I have ever eaten." Now, I haven't personally experienced the pod market banana, in large part because I have the eating habit of a 9-year-old, and so I'm bigoted against most types of produce. But I have very deep reservations about the pod market banana being very outstanding. Sorry, Zach. That's Zach, though, at any moment willing to invest wonder in his experience with the world and in the sometimes seemingly smallest details of those experiences. And if you've ever had a longish talk with Zach, you've seen that investment, that intensive wonder, turned toward you, and you've begun to feel a little more precise than you did before, more observed, more appreciated, more loved. Zach's approach to the subjects of his writing is like this. Each moment and detail is distilled. He's controlled, meticulous, precise. And in so much of his writing, what lingers after you've set the poem down is a kind of wonder, often on the speaker's part, wonder at the beauty of what's been observed and wonder at how sometimes the minuteness or even simplicity of what's been observed can have remarkable and touching impact, not only for the speaker, but for Zach's readers. Still, sometimes awe in Zach's work fixates also on the dire, on tragedy and death, on violence, cruelty and aberrant, if not sometimes wholly bizarre, human behaviors. I love the surprises he finds in these fixations, too. Again, in the little details, often of scene, but many times, too, in shifts in the narratives or monologues his speakers deliver, shifts that at first seem subtle, and yet change the emotional scope of the poems so drastically. Even the direst of Zach's work has a sweetness to it, a delicacy. And that's because his writing always finds a way toward wonder. And I think that's what I've learned best from reading Zach. While the craft of his work has given me a better sense of precision and how precision impacts, one of the major messages of his work as a whole has to do with the kind of intensity of attention and an intentionality in that attention to look for the little things, the details that make the world so much more. I want to say, too, how much I admire the choral quality of Zach's work. His speakers are various and idiosyncratic. And while I love how he characterizes all his speakers, what I love most in reading a persona poem by Zach is what I love about Zach. It is clear to me that Zach not only has done the world building necessary to create his fictional speakers, but that he invests in his own characters the intensive attention and wonder he invests in everything he encounters. He observes them because he wants to love them. Zach Strait is pursuing his PhD in creative writing at Florida State University. His work has appeared in Poetry and Plowshares, among other journals. Please help me welcome this wonderful person and poet to the stage.
I feel like you have to have something up here to be taken seriously, you know. It's, okay. All right. Thank you guys for coming out. It means a lot to me. The lights are really bright, so I can't see some of you, but I promise I appreciate you being here nonetheless. And thank you, my lovely wife, Allison, for making me a better man every day. I mean, you know I love you. You know. Okay. All right. Okay. Here we go. All right. Late January. This is heaven, I say to Allison, her body curled up against mine, the fat raindrops pattering against the eaves and branching down the window glass. She's too tired to part her eyelids, but she squeezes me tight and nods. We have spent the afternoon like this, just lying next to each other, letting our minds drift like two kids on a raft. The gray sky flashes outside, and I think back to the winters I spent walking the roads of Wichita, the orange street lamps above me, and the dusk light behind the hills. Everything seemed possible then, the snowflakes clinging to my hair. Do you miss being free? I ask Allison, for I have forgotten what loneliness is. I don't, she says, and stretches her arms. Divorce. It's early still. We squeeze into our rental car. My mom, two brothers, stepdad, and me, and pull the doors shut. I stare out the back window as we edge away, my dad stationary as a king in check beneath the motel portico. He doesn't have a sword, but he will be strong in the end game. Everyone wave goodbye, my mom says, and we lift our arms like we too are about to be nailed down to our crosses. My dad adds his handprint to the air, and I watch until he becomes another vanishing point. Long parallels of shadow stabbing at his Velcro sneakers. I'm really going to miss him, Nicholas says, his little fists opening and closing like flowers. Thank you. Okay, arc. It's the circle of life, you say, wiping raindrops from your eyes. Your grandma looks back and forth between us, her false teeth clicking together like a fistful of dice. She's mumbling questions that can never be answered, alone now in her knotted tunnels of memory. Still, every now and then, her face shines through, like she's floating beneath a sheet of broken ice on her hospital bed. Stacks of holiday cards are set up on her vanity, their barcodes reflected in its oval mirror. On one, a child is sleighing down a glittering hill of snow. Do you want to hear a story, you ask, and your grandma nods, managing a couple yeses. There is a small Bible in her nightstand, and it opens in your hands to the end of the flood. She is quiet as time as you read her the verses about a dove circling back over the water. You start to choke when it returns in the evening with an olive leaf. And then when it doesn't return a third time, you let yourself cry. Your grandma looks off toward the window, like she's expecting to see our spectrum of light bend above the empty branches of the tree outside. We look too, until we feel her breathing slow and turn back to find her eyes have sealed themselves like embryos. You return the Bible to its place, sliding it into one narrow drawer of darkness, and then we release her hands. They are delicate as wings beside her now, shivering like they're still too young to fly. Blaze. We were riding out to an abandoned farmhouse on his pearl black Triumph, deaf to the sound of bleeding sheep. That was when he told me it was the same model James Dean had swapped for 3 days after they'd finished filming East of Eden. I tried to tell him that was cool, but he didn't act like he'd heard me, so I hugged him tight and set my head on his shoulder and watched how the yellow moon was shifting behind the pines like the face of a jailbird. He'd told me before that his wife knew he didn't swing her way, but she was keeping quiet about it for her kid's sake. We rumbled into the dry grass and started cutting through the corn stalks into a big clearing where he kicked the bike stand and told me to get off. He tossed his chrome aviators, and then we started our hike to the farmhouse, which was sagging in the field opposite of us. We were quiet on the way like a couple of thieves about to rob someone blind. I stood back as he tore a warped door off the barn and flung it into the gravel. Inside, the air was dusty and thick, and the moon was still with us, cocked behind a streaked window, like we'd traded places, and now we were the jailbirds, serving a lifetime sentence without parole. John pulled off his steel-toe boots and told me to wait for him up in the hayloft. I left my loafers there and climbed a wood ladder until I was looking into the eyes of a great horned owl. He kept shaking his head like he couldn't believe what was about to happen. I was going to be John's first, but while I was gathering the wet straw, I smelled smoke and slid back down the ladder. That was when I saw the fire licking the crossbeams and ran outside. John was passing through the wheat like a final judgment. His figure was muscled with flame, and I kept silent as he reached for a head of grain and burned it to the ground. All right. Preservation. Nobody was there when my little girl drowned in the creek behind the farm. I found her floating face down in the water, the surface frozen with light. I hurried in and fished her out, did my best to breathe life into her, but she'd already gone to play a gold trumpet with the angels. I carried her back to the stables and laid her in an empty horse stall. The thermometer told me it was cold. I needed her to keep for the night while I assembled a mannequin out of wood, wool, and galvanized wire. My father had been a game hunter, and he'd taught me how to taxidermy animals, how to pare away, tan the skin without exposing the body cavity, how to extract the skull and bones for measurements. By the next week, I had my little girl seated across from me, in the chair where her mother used to eat, her hands on the table like porcelain. I put two glass eyes in her head. Fire Eater. The first time I saw him, he was performing at the state fair with the traveling sideshow. I clapped each time he spread his bare arms, tilted his beautiful head back, and shoved one torch after another down his throat. He could hold a cloud of vapor in his mouth and shoot it straight up like a rocket, or draw a trail of lighter fluid across his chest and send a flame from one fist to another. Later that night, I was straddling him in the back seat of his jalopy, a black hearse he kept stocked with red gallon-sized canisters of camp fuel. He reached his hand up under my dress and said I was soft, warm as a drizzle of candle wax. Once we were spent, he struck a match against his big teeth and lit our smokes. He wanted me to come with him and see our great country, leave all my family and friends behind. I told him I couldn't, and he just sat there naked, flicking away his ash. Midnight. Nice boots, a voice whispers. The snow crunching beneath my heels. I look down. They are nice boots. Dark blue. All right. They are nice boots. Dark blue, with little crescent moons pressed into the straps like thumbnail marks. I plan to keep them boxed for another occasion. Oh well. Thanks, I say. You're welcome, the voice says, louder this time. I look up and it's the moon, of course. He's big and orange as peaches in the summer. I wish I could bite into his cheek and soak my mouth with light. Maybe I'd do better in space, I say, flicking away my black cigarette and stuffing my hands in my pockets. Don't be silly, the moon says. I stick out my tongue at him and watch a tiny snowflake land on its tip. It dissolves there like a dream. It's just as cold here, the moon says. Conductor. He had a penchant for decapitating folks. With a guillotine he'd set up behind his trailer, built it himself, used a sheet of aluminum for the blade and weighted it with an old railroad tie. That's how we figured he must have worked for Union Pacific, which is still headquartered right here in Omaha, Nebraska. I remember sitting with my grandfather on the back porch and watching those trains whistle past in streaks of yellow and red. Didn't think it would end, but it did. Everything in life resolves in one way or another, and you have to learn how to suffer through it like Job did. After the devil got warrant to inflict him with sores and strike down his family. I never understood that story until years after the first victim had gone missing, and I saw how it affected his three children for the better. But I couldn't have known that while we were nosing around for clues and cruising back to the station with less than we'd started with. The break came after he'd picked up a young girl on her way home from an elementary school outside town. My deputies and myself sat patiently as her parents explained how they thought it might have been her uncle, who'd always made them feel uneasy when he'd look at her and smile. Said he had thick eyebrows and hands big enough to kill a steer. That evening, I found myself sneaking around back with my revolver out. Heads were lying in the grass like inflatable balls. And when his screen door swung open, I pulled the trigger without thinking twice. First and only man I killed in my years as sheriff. Folks ask me sometimes if it changed the way I see things, and I tell them I never understood much to begin with, but it taught me there's nothing a man won't do if you give him the chance. And if they ask me what haunts me the most, I say it was the blue and white mattress at the base of the guillotine and how clean the sheets were. All right. Okay. Self-portrait with M.C. Escher's hands. Whoever said that, I love you. All right. Being a tessellation of swans, horsemen, angels and demons and ships, mosaic metamorphosis of honeycomb to ivory city to rook, cycle of boy to block, a reduction of lizards, a whirlpool of fish, a union of spirals, rind of flesh, optimist, pessimist, ribbon of red ants and division of planes, ripple of shadows, puddle of trees, double planetoid, tetrahedral planetoid, order in chaos, illusion of space, a chameleon caged in the framework of a star, a stranger carrying a bottle through a house of stairs, a monk descending and ascending on a cloister roof simultaneously, a still life of spheres, a dewdrop on a succulent leaf, and a skull in an eye, a magic mirror, convergence of wings. Okay. All right. We're almost done. Thank you guys again for coming here. I have just a couple more, a few more. All right. At the Sea of Japan, let me remember this. Everything rendered with charcoal gray hues. The fog over the glassy sea. The cold stone in my fist. I have plucked it from the shoreline like a thief. The orphans have shown me how to fling it like a disc, how to make it skip. I sit down and watch the arc of their bodies, how they lift themselves into the air, how they bend forward and disappear again and again into the surf with their burlap sacks. They stagger back with a bounty of urchins, the light clinging to their pale skin like pieces of eggshell. They teach me how to break the red armor against the rocks, how to dig the meat out with my fingers. It is salty and delicious. Yeah. All right. Manga. Translated from the kanji characters, the word means whimsical drawings or impromptu sketches. That's what Wikipedia is telling me tonight. As winter erases each white flower of the Bradford pear and adds its bare branches to a page of preliminaries for spring, I picture my brother slipping his arms into Kaneda's red capsule jacket from the original Akira promo poster and blasting through these snowy foothills on his route to Neo Tokyo, a dystopia of neon lights and biker gangs. He's even got his matching laser rifle slung across his back. I was driving him to a BP gas station after midnight so he could pick up a bottle of blue bubblegum soda. That was when he told me he still feels lonely, even with so many beautiful things going on in the world around him, like the scientists who may be able to reverse aging in the next 20 years, or how we could end up living in a post-scarcity economy where money has lost all value. He said there's a machine in Texas that can mine gold out of air, but the world has been doing this since the first panel was inked in lampblack and the second was split by a brush stroke of light. Last poem. All right, immortality. Not on this earth, though we have danced beneath the stars for all our lives, nature reminds us how it burnishes the leaves each autumn. They crunch beneath our shoes and skitter across the streets. How foolish we are to think even our words might last. When Solomon beheld everything under the sun, he declared that the vanity of man was a chasing after of the wind. Maybe one day we will be the substance of myth, how we wrote books of passion, how we couldn't accept our own bodies. All right, thank you guys.